So, hello everybody. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you also to the organisers for the very kind invitation. It is, of course, a huge pleasure to be here. So what am I going to be talking about today? I'm going to be talking about my specific area of expertise, which is intermediary liability for third-party copyright infringement. And specifically, of course, because today's event is about human rights and the relationship between human rights and intellectual property law. What I'm going to be talking about is the relationship between human rights and intermediary liability for third-party copyright infringement. And moreover, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be taking a European perspective to this question. I'm going to be taking an EU perspective to this question, a harmonizing perspective to this question. And what I'm going to be talking about is the relationship, the relevance of human rights law, the relevance of the law of fundamental rights of the European Union, of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, to the European harmonization of intermediary liability for third-party copyright infringement. Now, before I begin, before we delve into that analysis, it is first appropriate to examine the current European rules for intermediary liability for third-party copyright infringement. What is the current EU legal framework? So, as most of you probably already know, the heart of that regime, the main thrust of that regime, is to be found in the so-called e-commerce directive, that is Directive 2031 EC. And at the very end of that directive, we find Section 4. And Section 4 is entitled The Liability of Intermediary Service Providers. And there we find the so-called safe harbor provisions. What are those? What are the safe harbors? The safe harbors are essentially immunities. They are defenses against liability. They are provisions that protect intermediaries against liability in the provision of three different types of services. So there are three safe harbors. Article 12 of the e-commerce directive protects intermediaries in the provision of mere conduit services. Article 13 of the e-commerce directive protects intermediaries from liability in the provision of caching services. And Article 14 of the directive protects intermediaries against liability in the provision of hosting services. Now, important as the safe harbors are, and they definitely are important, nevertheless, when examined from a harmonizing perspective, they do suffer from a number of limitations, a number of limits to their harmonizing power. Why do I say that? What do I mean by that? Well, I would argue that there are four such limitations that the safe harbors suffer from. So first and foremost, the safe harbors only protect intermediaries against liability in the provision of these three types of services, mere conduit, caching, and hosting. They tell us nothing about the liability of intermediaries that provide different types of services, such as, for example, search services, information location tools, as they are otherwise known. So secondly, the safe harbors are conditional, which means that they do not even always protect intermediaries in the provision of these three types of services. Additional requirements have to be met, and if those requirements aren't met, again, the safe harbors tell us nothing about the rules that govern the liability of the relevant intermediaries. Thirdly, the safe harbors are negatively stated, which means exactly that. They don't tell us what the rules are that govern intermediary liability. They only tell member states when they cannot impose liability on intermediaries. They say nothing about when such liability should be imposed. And fourthly, and perhaps most importantly for the purposes of this presentation, the safe harbors only protect intermediaries against liability in the strict sense of the word. So they only protect intermediaries against liability for monetary compensation, for the payment of damages. They say nothing about the potential of imposing liability on intermediaries for injunctive relief. And indeed, all three of the safe harbors contain a final paragraph which declares that they are without prejudice to the possibility of ordering of court orders against intermediaries, of injunctions against intermediaries, ordering them to take action for the termination and prevention of copyright infringement. And this last limitation, in particular, is quite important. It has been put to great effect by the European legislator, specifically in the area of copyright. What the European legislator has done is they've relied on this limitation of the safe harbours to provide an additional titbit of information on the European harmonisation of intermediary liability that applies only to this area of law, only to copyright law. So according to Article 8.3 of the Information Society Directive, the main directive that harmonises copyright law at the European level, according to Article 8.3, Member States must ensure that right holders are in a position to apply for an injunction against intermediaries whose services are used by a third party to infringe copyright or a related right. At the same time, this provision doesn't necessarily provide us with as much information as you might think. So Recital 59 of the InfoSoc Directive also makes it clear that the conditions and modalities relating to such injunctions are to be left to the national law of the individual member states. So again, the harmonising power over here is not necessarily very great. So does Article 8 of the InfoSoc Directive mean that any kind of measure can be imposed on intermediaries in this way? Certainly not. Limitations do exist. And for this purpose, we have to turn back to the Commerce Directive and to Article 15 of the Commerce Directive, which follows the safe harbours. And what Article 15 of the Commerce Directive says is it says that member states shall not impose, therefore we can assume also through the vehicle of injunctions, member states shall not impose a general obligation on providers that are protected by a safe harbour, that are protected by Articles 12, 13, and 14. Member states shall not impose a general obligation to monitor the information which they transmit or store, or a general obligation to seek out facts or circumstances indicating illegal activity. And this is basically as far as the secondary law of the European directives can take us. Is it the end of the road? Certainly not. In the absence of further information in the relevant secondary EU law, in the relevant directives, the EU directives governing intermediary liability and copyright law, the CJU has instead turned from answers away from those directives, away from the secondary rules of EU, the secondary rules of EU law, away from the directives, and directly to turn towards primary European law, turn towards the Law of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, and specifically the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. And in order to do that, essentially what the court has done is it's reinterpreted the question of intermediary liability as a question of a conflict between opposing fundamental rights. And what the court has done in the area of copyright for this purpose is, well, it's recognised, as has been mentioned by a number of presenters already, it's recognised that certainly copyright is enshrined, its protection is enshrined in the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. So copyright is protected as a fundamental right under Article 17.2 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. At the same time, however, the court has said that this does not mean that copyright is absolute and inviolable and must be absolutely protected. Instead, what the court has said, and this has been mentioned many times already, and it's particularly significant in the area of intermediary liability, what the court has said is that a fair balance needs to be struck between the protection of copyright on the one hand and the protection of the fundamental rights of all other relevant stakeholders, the fundamental rights of all other relevant parties that are protected by the community legal order. So what are those rights? So the exact modalities, the exact configuration will change from case to case. But as a general rule, the following rights are relevant in this construction, in this interpretation of intermediary liability as a conflict between opposing fundamental rights. So on the one hand, we of course have copyright, the right of the right holders to the protection of their copyright protected under Article 17.2 of the Charter. And on the other hand, we have a collection of a variety of rights of the intermediary itself, as well as the users of the intermediary. So on the one hand, we have the freedom of the intermediary to conduct a business. This is protected under Article 16 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. And then also, in addition, we have to consider the rights of the users of the intermediary, the rights of the end users to the protection of their privacy, the protection of their personal data, and their freedom of expression. And these are rights that are enshrined in Article 7, 8, and 11, respectively, of the Charter. Now, this notion of fair balance and this tripartite conceptualization of the rights of the copyright holder, the intermediary, and the user that it has brought with it has definitely been very helpful in visualizing, in identifying, in conceptualizing the interests that are at stake in cases of intermediary liability. One problem does remain, however, in this regard, and that is that in and of itself, the notion of a fair balance does not provide us with a lot of concrete interpretative material. It does not provide us with definitive answers in cases of intermediary liability. And that is something that has been pointed out by plenty of commentators. Jonathan Griffiths earlier mentioned an article that he wrote in 2013 pointing out exactly this problem. He described that article now as his position taken in that article as intemperate. I'm not entirely sure that is a fair assessment, because especially back in 2013, this was a point that was being raised by a lot of commentators. The reason being that back then, fair balance was essentially approached as a mystery box. There wasn't a lot of information about exactly what it meant. Nevertheless, the case law of the CJU has since then, and Jonathan also mentioned this, has since then provided, been very helpful in this regard. It's provided for what Jonathan called a tightening of the doctrine of fair balance, a gradual evolution of the information that is provided through the doctrine of fair balance. So the first relevant case that applied the notion of fair balance to intermediary liability was a case that has been mentioned a number of times already, the ProMusicae case. And there the court basically limited itself merely to pointing out that a fair balance is something that has to be struck in cases of intermediary liability. So member states are allowed, in that case, the court said that they were allowed to take measures to allow for the identification of end users that engage in copyright infringement. If they did so, they had to strike a fair balance, but the court didn't provide any further information about how that would happen. In a subsequent case, L'Oréal versus eBay, which was a trademark case, but it was also an intermediary liability case and therefore also helpful in conceptualizing, in identifying this gradual evolution in the case law, in the approach taken by the CJU. So in L'Oréal versus eBay, what the court did is it went one step further. And in addition to saying that a fair balance is something that has to be struck, it also provided some balancing examples. So it said that intermediaries may not be obliged to actively monitor all of the information which they transmit or store in order to prevent all future trademark infringements, but other measures would be possible. And the court specifically mentioned measures for the suspension of the account of the end user, as well as measures for the identification of the end user. So those would be examples which, again, the court did not prescribe, but which would be possible under the doctrine of a fair balance. And then after that, in Scarlett Extended and in Netlog, which were two filtering cases, the court moved the case law even further forward, and it provided actual balancing results. And those were two cases that concerned the possible application of an injunctive order against a host service provider and against an internet access provider, ordering them to filter the information which they transmitted and stored. And the court made clear that broad filtering obligations, at least, are not compatible with the notion of a fair balance and should therefore be excluded. Member states cannot impose such obligations on intermediaries. However, the most helpful CJU judgment to date, I would argue, with regard to fair balance in the area of intermediary liability is indubitably Telecabel Veen. And this was a case that concerned a blocking order that was going to be issued by a national court against an internet access provider, against a provider like BT, which allows its subscribers, enables its subscribers to access the internet. And the case concerned a blocking order, so an order obliging Telekabelvin, the internet access provider, to block access for its subscribers to a website. The specific website was called Kino.to, and this was a streaming website and a hotbed, a known hotbed of copyright infringement. And a case that was itself also primarily liable for that infringement, a case that a website that was itself engaging in communication to the public of copyright-protected material. And the court approached this case again through the fair balance doctrine, and it identified as the relevant rights in that case the right, of course, of the copyright holders themselves to the protection of their copyright on the one hand, and then on the other hand we had the freedom of the intermediary itself to conduct its business, protected again under Article 16 of the Charter, and of course the freedom of information of the end users themselves, protected under Article 11 of the Charter, their freedom of expression and information. And what the court did in that case was its approach. It started analysing the blocking injunction through the lens of each of these individual fundamental rights. So it started with examining the blocking order through the lens of the freedom of the intermediary to conduct a business. And what it said in this regard is that the imposition of a blocking order on an intermediary indubitably does constitute an interference with the intermediary's freedom to conduct a business. Nevertheless, however, a fair balance may be struck under certain circumstances. And what the court pointed out was that a fair balance is possible if the intermediary is, first of all, allowed the freedom to choose the specific measures that it is going to employ in order to achieve the blocking result, because this will allow the intermediary to choose the measures that are best suited to its resources and abilities, and the measures which are best compatible with any other obligations that the intermediary might also have. So that is one thing that is necessary to ensure a fair balance. And also the intermediary must additionally be able to avoid liability by being able to prove that it has taken all reasonable measures so that it is not obliged to make unbearable sacrifices. So these are requirements of fair balance as approached through the lens of the freedom of the intermediary to conduct its business. The court then went on to consider the blocking order through the lens of the freedom of information, the freedom of expression and information of the users of the intermediary. And in this case, what the court said was that the intermediary, in selecting the specific measures that it is going to apply in order to abide by the blocking order, has to ensure compliance with the fundamental right of internet users to freedom of expression. And this is significant because what we see here is a rather important twist that is taking place, a rather important twist engaged in by the CJEU. Essentially, what the CJEU is doing is reinterpreting the obligation of the state to safeguard the freedom of expression and information of end users itself as an obligation of the intermediary, a private company, to do the same. In any case, what the court said was that the measures that the intermediary adopts have to be strictly targeted in order to respect the freedom of expression and information, in the sense that although they definitely should serve to bring the copyright infringement to an end, they should do so without affecting the possibility of internet users who are using the provider's services to lawfully access information. If this is not possible, then the measure would be unjustified in light of the objective pursued. There would not be a fair balance. Finally, the court went on to consider the issue through the lens of the right of the right holders themselves to the protection of their copyright. And in this regard, the court noted that it is entirely possible that a means of putting a complete end to the infringements of the intellectual property right might not exist, so that some measures might be taken which can, in fact, be circumvented by the end users. The court pointed out, however, that this is not a problem because, as we've already mentioned, copyright is not an absolute right that has to be, it's not an inviolable right, it does not have to be absolutely protected. Instead, what is necessary is that the measures which are taken must simply be sufficiently effective to ensure a genuine protection. And in the end, the court signed off by bringing all of these elements together, bringing this analysis together, in order to provide a set of rather convoluted instructions on how to achieve a fair balance in cases of blocking orders. And essentially what it said was that, well, on the one hand, of course, the intermediaries must be allowed to choose the specific measures themselves. They must also be allowed to avoid liability where they can show that they've taken all reasonable measures. In choosing those measures, they have to pay attention to the striking of a fair balance. And for that effect, they must make sure not to unnecessarily deprive end users of the possibility of accessing information lawfully. But at the same time, the relevant measures must have the effect of preventing unauthorized access to copyright infringement, or at least making it difficult to achieve, or seriously discouraging internet users from engaging in copyright infringement. So why do I argue that Telekabelveen is a particularly important decision? Why is this a particularly important analysis? The main reason for that is essentially that it represents the beginning, the starting point of a consistent line of case law followed by the CJU, adopted by the CJU, handed down by the CJU on the principle of fair balance and the application of that principle to intermediary liability, or at least to the area of injunctive orders issued against intermediaries in the enforcement of copyright. So in subsequent case law, essentially what the court has done is it's applied the same analysis, the same considerations, the same broad analysis to different cases of injunctions against internet intermediaries. This is most of all evident in a case that was handed down in September of last year, the McFadden case. This also concerned injunctions against a different type of internet access provider, a Wi-Fi provider that enabled people to use its network for free in order to access the internet. And there the court, it's been mentioned already by other presenters, the court considered three possible injunctions that could be issued against the Wi-Fi provider. So first it considered the possibility of an order to terminate the Wi-Fi network entirely, and applying the same broad analysis that it had applied, that it had first developed in Telekabelveen, it reached the conclusion that that would not strike a fair balance. Then the court also considered the possibility of ordering the Wi-Fi provider to monitor all of the information which is transmitted through that network, and it likewise considered that a fair balance would not be struck. And it finally reached the conclusion that an order to password protect the network would strike a fair balance. And then more recently yet, in an opinion that was handed down recently by Advocate General Spooner, in the Stichting Reis versus Ziggo case, the same broad analysis was applied concerning injunctions ordering an internet access provider to block access to a peer-to-peer network. So again, in that case, the blocking injunction was found through the same broad analysis to, under the same conditions, could represent a fair balance. However, again, this tightening of the relevant case law can be observed because two things distinguish the McFadden case and the Ziggo opinion from Telekabelveen. A further twist in the approach of the CJU can be discerned. So previously, the case law of the CJU on injunctions against intermediaries had limited itself to merely examining whether these injunctions are permissible under the Charter of Fundamental Rights, under the doctrine of a fair balance between opposing fundamental rights. But in McFadden, what seems to be happening is something a little bit more. Essentially, in McFadden, what the court said was that since two of the measures that were considered in that case had been rejected, it was therefore necessary to adopt the third measure in order to achieve a fair balance. Otherwise, the court would be depriving the fundamental right of intellectual property, of the right holders of any protection, and therefore it was necessary to actually adopt the relevant measure. And then in his opinion on the Ziggo Brine case, the Advocate General Spooner essentially adopted a very similar approach, and it tied this analysis back to the concept of the safe harbors, the Commerce Directive and the provisions on the safe harbors. And there what it essentially said was that a counterpart to the safe harbors, a counterpart of the protection that is provided through the safe harbors to intermediaries, is the fact that they have an obligation to cooperate in order to avoid or prevent copyright infringement. So this is an added twist that can be identified in the case law of the court. And essentially, perhaps, what we could see is what the court is doing here is moving beyond the application of fair balance as a tool that only clarifies what is permissible, what is not prescribed, a tool, in other words, that only informs member states when they have overstepped the boundaries that are set by fundamental rights, towards the establishment of positively stated rules on injunctions, at least on this one area of intermediary liability. So that instead of leaving the conditions and modalities for the imposition of such injunctions to the member states, what it is doing is developing case law that in fact governs those conditions and modalities. So, does this mean that what we could be seeing, what we could be doing, what the court is potentially doing, is moving towards a case law based, a CJU made, a human rights based harmonization of intermediary liability, a substantive harmonization of intermediary liability that goes beyond the safe harbors and the current provisions on injunctions, and which is based entirely on the law of fundamental rights and is achieved entirely through the avenue of fundamental rights. So, exciting or scary, depending on your point of view, as this prospect might be, I would argue that the only real answer can be not really. Why is that? So certainly through this tightening of the case law, the court is definitely providing factors. It's providing guidance as to how such a fair balance can be achieved. At the same time, however, for the time being at least, these factors are not very general. They're not very flexibly formulated. For one thing, they're only relevant at the moment to internet access providers, whether we're talking about ISPs such as Ziggo and Access for All and Telekabel Veen, or whether we're talking about Wi-Fi providers, as was the case in McFadden. And secondly, it's only relevant to injunctions. And the reason for that is that it's only in injunctions that we have positively stated provisions in EU law in the form of Article 8.3 of the InfoSoc Directive. By contrast, there is no basis in EU secondary law that makes the law of fundamental rights relevant to the liability of intermediaries, not for injunctions, but just for damages. As was mentioned earlier by Martin Husevec, what is necessary under Article 51 of the Charter is that there has to be such a basis in EU secondary law, because the Charter is just addressed to the EU itself and to the member states when implementing EU law. And as a result, as it stands at the moment, the European harmonization of intermediary liability for third-party copyright infringement, the current framework, remains an incomplete lateral solution. There still is no positively stated harmonized law governing intermediary liability for third-party copyright infringement. So is that the end of the road? Is that it? Certainly not. So there are two ways forward for European intermediary liability from this point. So first and foremost, one of the ways through which things could develop from now on is that the court could attempt, nevertheless, to find some sort of basis in the secondary EU law of the directives. And another option, of course, could be that the European legislator devises such a basis, that it adopts, it creates such a basis in the directives. And importantly, it seems to me that there are currently very strong indications that both of these processes are underway. So one of these indications can be found in the GS Media case, which was a case that has already been mentioned by Jonathan and by Martin. And in that case, what the court examined was the question of whether hyperlinkers should be liable themselves for infringements that have been committed by, for infringing content to which they link, for infringements that have been committed by the authors of the content, the posters of the content to which they link. And what the court said in that case was that if the hyperlinker knew or ought to have known that the relevant content was infringing, then yes, it might be found to have been communicating a work to the public and therefore have been engaging in primary copyright infringement themselves. So, of course, a hyperlinker is not an intermediary. The case nevertheless did concern an issue which many people from a pragmatic perspective would define as being relevant not to primary copyright infringement, but instead to secondary copyright infringement. And this realization, this logic, potentially leads to an intriguing conclusion. Because if other areas of secondary liability can be reinterpreted as questions of primary liability so as to find a basis in EU law for harmonization through the vehicle of human rights, then the same could happen to intermediary liability as well. And this could open up the possibility of applying the European law of fundamental rights to intermediary liability beyond the injunctions. And indeed, as has already been pointed out in GS Media, the court reached its conclusions as to the relevance of knowledge to the liability of hyperlinkers through relying on a logic that was very much informed by the notion of a fair balance and the notion of a right balance, as it was called in that case, and the freedom of expression of the end users as opposed to the fundamental right to copyright of the right holders themselves. So is it likely that this approach is also going to be taken in intermediary liability? So one significant indication that that could indeed happen is the opinion of Advocate General Spooner in the Stichting Brand versus Ziggo case. This was a case that concerned the liability of the Pirate Bay. And in that case, Advocate General Spooner started off by saying that this was a case that was very different to GS Media. Nevertheless, he insisted that a harmonized European solution would be necessary in this area as well. And then he proceeded to craft that harmonized solution. He proceeded to apply a harmonized solution that is very evocative of the reasoning of the court in GS Media. Now, of course, it remains to be seen if the CJEU itself is going to adopt the reasoning of the Advocate General, but if it did, then that would be an indication that the door could open for the application of the concept of fair balance to intermediary liability even beyond the area of injunctions. In any case, even if that doesn't happen, another way forward could also be provided by EU legislation, and again, there are indications that this is also a possibility that could become a reality. So at the moment, in September 2015, the European Commission handed down a proposal for a directive on copyright in the digital single market. Article 13 of that proposal contains one provision, which is relevant to intermediary liability. Essentially, what Article 13 of the e-commerce directive does, it's a very complicated provision, a very convoluted provision, but what it does certainly seem to aspire to do is to impose obligations on intermediaries in order to take certain actions, in order to take certain measures, in order to avoid third-party copyright infringement, in order to enforce copyright. So Article 13 of the proposal is at the moment quite complicated and difficult to interpret, but nevertheless it is possible that a vehicle for the introduction of fair balance into intermediary liability could be possible in that way. And again, even the provision of Article 13 itself ties it back to the question of proportionality and therefore the question of fair balance between opposing fundamental rights. Now certainly, there is a lot to criticise in Article 13 of the current proposal. First of all, Article 13 does not represent a general solution to intermediary liability. For one thing, it only addresses host service providers and only providers that make available large amounts of data. large amounts of copyright infringement. It also doesn't specify the measures that should be taken by the intermediary. It only provides some examples, and those examples are potentially incompatible with fundamental rights as they have been interpreted to date by the CJEU. Nevertheless, if Article 13 itself, or if an amendment to Article 13 is indeed adopted, then this could constitute a small substantive harmonisation of the rules of intermediary liability. And then that small harmonisation, by extension, could also expand the relevance of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union to intermediary liability. But of course, we'll have to see how things develop from this point onwards. Thank you very much for your attention.